Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene. I'm Wole and I'm your host. Will and Ray are out. We are also part of Empire Media at empiremedia.com. Just to get through all the logistics, Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the urban sports scene. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Like, we trying to do big things. I want y'all to hit the subscribe button, you know, hit likes to almost all of our videos. That does wonders for algorithms, so make sure you do that anyway. This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T would normally say it, but I'm going to say it. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. I'll recap the Commanders' preseason game against the Carolina Panthers and preview their upcoming preseason game against the Kansas City Chiefs with three-point conversions, Carita Parks. Finally, at 8:35, host of The Real Deal with Damian Adams and co-host of the Third and Three podcast, Damian Adams, will join me to recap Teofimo Lopez, TK Owen, Pedro Campa, and then we'll preview Usyk Joshua 2. All right, but first, right now, I have founder of Double Take Sports and 3-Point Conversions Washington Commanders reporter Carita Parks on the line. What's good, Carita?
Hello, what's up?
What's good? How you been?
Been busy, but definitely been good.
That's good. Being busy is good. You know what I'm saying?
It definitely is. After dealing with the pandemic and not being that busy.
I feel you. But you know, look, I peep game. You're doing multiple things right now. Like, I've seen you. You doing Raven stuff now too? What?
Yeah, I'm trying to slide in.
I know, right?
Slide on in.
Look, man. You, how does that work, you know, doing enemy territory, I guess, for certain fans, right?
Guess for certain fans, but I am a neutral NFL reporter, so...
I know that's right.
I am not a fan of any team that I write about.
You know what I'm saying? FYI, I didn't want any smoke to your Facebook posts, man. I was agreeing with you. I just want you to know that about Deshaun Watson.
I didn't know. Like, it was no attitude. I just was like, I hope I didn't sound like
that. No, you didn't. I was joking around.
But I hear you. No. I totally
hear you. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm like, I agree with you. Everything you were saying, I was like, yeah. You know, I agree with it. All right, but we're here to talk Washington Commanders. So, we don't get into that. We
don't
could
get me on my soapbox.
Oh, we could. I could be there with you because I could be there with you. You have no idea.
I know.
You have no idea. I would be the in terms of public opinion, I'm far on the other side of it. So it is what it is. All right. So last Saturday in their first preseason game of the year, the Washington Commanders fell to the Carolina Panthers 23-21. You were there covering the game. You were in the building. What stood out to you? What stood out most to you about the Commanders' performance?
You know, one thing that stood out to me is just their first series. Mm-hmm. They started a little slow on offense, and then even the defense was a bit slow as well. They allowed Baker to march down the field 53 yards. So I did want to see them do a little better, and they did in the next few series. It was a very small sample size, but Carson Wentz, he did what he needed to do in that short period of time. Obviously didn't like the Antonio Gibson fumble.
Okay.
I'm definitely rooting for him, But you have to hold on to the ball. You really do have to hold on to the ball. Brian Robinson Jr., though, because I haven't been at training camp the way some of the other reporters have been, so I haven't actually seen what he can do, but I did like what I saw from him as well. Let's see, what else? I mean, I also did like what I saw from Sam Howell at the end. Yes, he was obviously playing with the, like, third string, but if you just look at him, if you just focus on him, he definitely has an arm.
Yes.
And he showed that he can use his legs. To me, he showed that he's a competitor.
Yep. Great.
So I liked seeing that too. And I, like I said, I haven't seen, I need to see more of Sam Howell, but I don't know if Taylor Heinicke is necessarily like safe in the, maybe he is safe in the backup role in the sense that he's played in the NFL more than Sam Howell, but I still think it's something to watch.
I would hope that taking a Heineke's job isn't safe. as the backup, I mean, as the backup, I'm not here to knock anybody's job. I want everybody to keep their job, make their living or whatnot. But I would hope, you know, that, you know, from that, from his play and from all the words and the stuff we've heard out of camp, that, you know, this dude is proving it. He's showing you in practice, and he's proving it in games. I know I hate the whole thought of, well, he's doing it against third strings. No one's asking him to start over Carson Wentz. Like, no one's saying
right.
that. Like, we can pump our brakes with that. No one is making that argument. But
no,
I do think,
not at all.
But to what you just said, I think it's valid. Like, he's a baller. Like, he's a gamer. Like, you can see it. Like, he has tools that you can say, you know what? He's not scared of the moment, though. You know, it's still
right,
a higher
exactly.
level from college ball, right? You're playing against guys who are better than college football players. So you are playing to another level, and you kind of are – you're flourishing, and you're doing things that look good as a quarterback. Like, you're being accurate. You're throwing the football on the money. You're making plays. You know what I mean? Like, those are things that will translate. Oh, no, is that going to say that you're going to be the next Tom Brady? No, but you know who played good in preseason against third stringers? Russell Wilson. And what happened? He became a starter. And he became
Dangerous.
A Yeah, exactly. And
Dangerous.
Became a Pro Bowl starter and a Super Bowl winner. They're
but
a play.
Listen,
yeah, go ahead, Creator.
Sam Howell, he brought life into the crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the so much time had went by because it's the like first quarter. It had been quiet for a while because nothing was happening.
It was like 26,
but
right?
I don't even think that the crowd was that loud when the starters were out there. Like, he brought excitement. He did. And the crowd was definitely into it when they started seeing him making some plays. To your point, nobody's saying start him over Carson Wentz. Not at all.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is a possibility he could slide into that backup role a little earlier than maybe anticipated.
Yeah. I heard Coach Rivera came out and said, like, every position – it's competition. Like, that's a lie, but still, whatever. It is a lie. Like, just certain, if that was the case, then certain people wouldn't even have jobs.
Well, I do have one more positive.
Go ahead.
It was very brief. It was very brief as well, because, like I said, the starters were not out there long. Uh-huh. But I did think on the defensive side, the secondary looked pretty good.
Yeah.
For the brief second that they were out there, which is progress from last season, because they were having a lot of communication issues.
Yep.
But they look to be more in sync.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, since you're in the press box, what was the vibe of the press box about their performance? Did people feel good? Did they feel like, all right, same old? Like, what was the total vibe of it?
I don't think people felt like same old. I think it was neutral, to be honest.
Okay.
I didn't feel like they felt like same old, but I don't think they were overly impressed either.
Got
you. You know, I think it was kind of like, okay. I think people need to and want to see more, but yeah, nobody was over-impressed or over-excited, because especially, like I said, that first half or so, you know, wasn't a lot to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so there wasn't a lot to really go off of and be like, oh, this team is going to be different.
Yes, I agree. It didn't look different. It didn't look different as a spectator.
You know, it didn't look that different.
As an individual watching the game, man, it looked that different.
It didn't look that different. Like I said, I didn't like how, you know, I just didn't like the slow start on both sides of the ball. But especially when I think about how this offense has started slow, for the past few years. Yep. So to me, that wasn't necessarily a good sign. I hope to see something different. I know we'll talk about it later. I hope to see something different next preseason game. But wasn't bad, just wasn't overly impressive either.
Yeah, you're being nice. It's okay. It wasn't great. But but I'm with you though. Like, you can still pick certain things out of preseason, certain performances, and I felt like, to me, Sam Howell looked good. My issue, and you know, we're gonna get to Gibson. I think that's something we do definitely have to get into. But I do want to say, like, the special teams thing. Like, this is a consistent theme now. Like, missing an extra point and missing it the way he missed it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and the kickoff returns, the punt returns, it wasn't anything special. Like, and I'm no pun intended, but this team, like, that has to be situated. Like, Ron has to get that situated. I said this when it happened, you know, when in the offseason when they didn't try to bring back DeAndre Carter. I was like, I don't know why, like, you're not bringing this kid back. He's not expensive, and he was a really good return man for you, and you decided not to bring him back. And the options that you brought, the options that so far, and I know it's a slim sample size that we've seen in the preseason, in that first preseason game, those dudes weren't impressive at all. Just saying.
And, you know, I think as fans, they want to see progress.
Yes.
You don't have to be spectacular in the preseason. Everybody knows you're not going to be. Uh-huh. But you want to see some progress.
I agree.
You know, and I saw a little bit in certain areas. It's like you said, in certain areas. Uh-huh. So I think the real deal will be able to really tell after this next game.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get to see something different. But, yeah, Karita, you mentioned Antonio Gibson. Gibson fumbled again Saturday. It looks like he's been demoted, and he was seen practicing as a punt and kickoff returner in practice. Do you think Gibson can get back to good graces with Coach Rivera and the team?
I think he can, but it's like actions, right?
Yeah.
If he holds on to the ball, if he does not fumble the ball in key situations, then yes, he can, but it has to also be consistent. Mm-hmm. He can't just, you know, he has to show a consistent ability to not fumble the football. He's in his third year at this point. Uh-huh. It should not still be such a prevalent problem. I don't know if he's in his own head or what, and that's possible, or what it is, but I think patience is very thin. Or also, sometimes I think about it, because they converted him to a running back.
Yes.
But I'm thinking that's probably not his strength. Wide receiver is probably more of his strength than running back. So I do think he's struggling a little bit with that transition.
Yeah, I agree.
He's made some strides, but I don't think that's naturally where he shines. Mm-hmm. And they try to make him into something that he's not necessarily meant to be. But it gave him a spot on the team also, because they're wide receivers. They always have like an abundance of wide receivers. Uh-huh. But yeah, I think he has to show the consistent ability not to turn the ball over. I think definitely patience is thin, because he's in his third year. Patience is also probably thin because Ron Rivera knows the microscope's on him. You got to show that this team can be good and also be good enough to go to the playoffs. And also you have to show that the money you spent to bring Carson Wentz in was worth it. So there's a lot of underlying pressure around this team, especially in Coach Rivera. So I think patience is going to be very thin with mistakes.
Yeah, I just think, you know, he's showing you a track record of fumbling. And, you know, I don't want to pile on him because, you know, obviously he's trying, and he's trying hard. You know
what
I
mean? Yeah, he is. That's a tough position to be in when you have all this public scrutiny and everything.
Social media and everything, right? And people adding you and whatnot and whatever. But, this team chose violence. You know what I mean? I like using that term. They chose violence. Because, like you said, they changed the wide receiver to a running back. And it wasn't like he played running back in college. And yeah, he may be a gifted runner with the football in his hand in college, but it's a different animal when you're telling a wide receiver to play running back in the NFL and trying to make this kid a top-of-the-level running
but
back.
But they don't even use him as
exactly.
They don't even use him like in the same way as they use J.D. McKissick, which would seem like you kind of would.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Because he was a wide receiver.
Agreed.
So it's like they're making him, they're trying to make him into like a Adrian Peterson type
agreed.
Runner.
Agreed.
Right.
Agreed. So this is my thing. This is why I don't blame Antonio Gibson. I don't blame him. I think this organization, and I mean this regime, because they drafted him, and they wanted to utilize him this way. They've set him up for failure. And if he succeeds, it would be totally on him, right? To me, because you're not even using him to his strength, like what you just said. You're not putting him outside and to get matchups against linebackers. You're basically trying to make him into a bruising style running back, which mm-hmm. makes no sense. Like, get this kid in space. Let him make moves. Because I had this discussion with a couple of my friends. They were like, well, he's not even, like, you know, when he gets an open field, he's not that fast. He gets caught. I'm like, no, he could. Every once in a while, he's in open space. He'll show you his speed. Like, he's very fast. I think it's the Cowboys. He had one long run, I think, on the screen. And against Buffalo, he definitely had one last year against mm-hmm. Buffalo. So he has that. His speed is legit. Like, it is legit speed. But you got to get him in space. And if you keep trying to, you know, grind him and ride him, you know, to get like 4 or 5 yards. No, get this dude in space. Give him in the screen game. Get him in the passing game so he gets some mismatches against linebackers. You mentioned McKissick. Use him that way. Or use him like the Saints use Kamara. Like, mm-hmm. use him that way. But you're using him in a way where you want this kid. You're putting him in the best situation to fail.
Well, you know, but Ron Rivera doubled down on that in his comments after the game in the press room. He said Antonio's got to run hard. When he runs straight ahead, you know, that's when he's at his best. Mm-hmm. So they're not changing their mindset on the type of runner they want him to be or are trying to make him be.
Well, you better be running Gibson then. Robinson then, because then you, like, again, you won't get the same thing. What's the definition of insanity, Carita?
Doing the same thing over and over.
There you go. Be as stubborn as you want to, but be known that you're going to be defined as insane. You know, do what you want. Be stubborn, but you're defined as insane by doing that, because you're setting that kid up, and you're definitely putting your ball club in a place where it's going to be hard for them to be successful. So, but mm-hmm. I'm rooting for Gibson too. I don't want him, like, I hope he doesn't lose confidence.
Yeah, I like him, and I think that he is a. I don't think, to your point, I don't think it's his fault. I mean, I think he's doing the best he can.
Yeah.
But that's just, like I said, I don't feel like that's his natural ability. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing something that's not natural to you, you can only succeed so much.
Yeah. So, man, hopefully he gets out of his head. I do think it's mental, too. I do think it's mm-hmm. a little mental.
It's mental. It gets to be mental at a certain point, and I think that's where we are right now.
Definitely. All right, so you mentioned Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz was 10 for 13 for 74 yards, leading the team to a touchdown drive where the rookie Robinson Jr. ran for a touchdown. But what mm-hmm. was your overall thought process of his performance?
I thought Carson Wentz did what he needed to do. He was efficient. He had a couple of overthrows, but nothing too major to be expected. But, you know, I think people wanted to see him be accurate, and he was accurate.
Uh-huh.
People want to see him make good decisions, and he was able to do that. I mean, it's interesting because Carson Wentz, he is a veteran at this point, a veteran quarterback in this league.
Yeah.
So it's like we got the microscope on him like he's a backup. And I get it, because Carson Wentz has been a little inconsistent since his injury, and you don't really know what you're going to get. But I think if you can get confident Carson Wentz, who doesn't make silly mistakes,
uh-huh.
you'll be fine. And, I mean, I saw him, like I said, he seemed to be that on Saturday.
Yeah.
But it was a short time period.
Yeah.
I feel satisfied with what I saw.
I'm with you. I like what Carson did. I was impressed. I mean, he was accurate. I mean, he was going to the mm-hmm. tight ends. I mean, yeah, like you said, he missed a couple passes, but some of them, one scary McLaurin, they didn't call it, but it was a pass interference. They didn't call it. And the other one was, you know, he overthrew Jahan Dotson. I thought he was fine. I thought if he can play that way, I think that they have something there.
Yeah.
You know, you got to utilize him correctly. But I was not to say like I was whoa, like highly impressed. But I was satisfied. Like I thought he was good. I thought his performance was good.
Yeah, I was satisfied. I didn't see anything alarming. Mm-hmm. No concerns. I just think it comes down to his decision making in certain situations, because you know we saw him implode.
Yeah.
When he played the Jaguars last year, I think
I knew he was going to mention Jacksonville. I knew he was going to do that. I knew he was going to mention Jacksonville. I knew he was going to mention Jacksonville.
Well, you know why? Because I think it's so ironic that that was his, like, the game that just, like, put the nail in the coffin.
I think it's crazy. I know. I'm with you.
For him with Indy, and then, like, that's his first game. In Washington, you know, who only plays the Jaguars every 3 years.
It's wild, right? Like, he got some demons, man. Yeah, he got some demons. He got some dragons to slay, man. He got some dragons to slay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean? He better come out, prove yourself. Yeah. But he got. But on the other side, it just depends on how the Jaguars are. I don't know how they're going to be yet.
I'll tell you.
But you got Doug Peterson, who knows Carson Wentz inside and out. And one thing I will say about Doug Peterson is he's an aggressive-minded coach.
Sure is.
He was like that in Philly. He's very aggressive minded, so I'm sure he's going to be having something for Carson.
Look, I'm going to tell all Washington fans who, you know, look at the Jaguars as an easy team. That team is talented because they've drafted. When you're a bad team, you draft first round picks all the time, like high quality first round picks, and they got talent. Like, I love Trevor Lawrence. I just thought that Urban Meyer was just a horrible dude for him.
He was absolutely horrible.
I think Trevor Lawrence will be one of the best quarterbacks in the league once, and I think he's with the right coach. Like, I think this coach is perfect for him. I think it's perfect for Trevor Lawrence. You want Etienne's back? I know. I always say like after when you tear ACL, it's not going to be the following year. It's the year after that for you to have your real season. But he's still talented. And then you got some nice young pieces on defense and Allen and whatnot. So I think this team, the Jacksonville
and Zay Jones, they used him in the first preseason game. They had him in there a lot. So I feel like there's something they want to do with him and Trevor Lawrence. They're definitely trying to build that chemistry up. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting because I'm not going to lie, I have very low expectations. And the first preseason game, I was very surprised how well they moved the ball. They did struggle a little bit in the red zone.
Yeah,
but I was very surprised at how well they moved the ball downfield.
If Doug Peterson can win with Nick Foles, he can definitely win with Trevor Lawrence. Let me put it that way. And he was doing good with Carson until Carson got hurt. So just let you know that, you know, it ain't going to be as sweet as everybody thinks it is when they see Jacksonville. Just if it ends up being sweet, then that means Washington got something. I'm going to be honest with you, because Jacksonville won't be – like, I don't think Jacksonville is the biggest pushover, like people say. There is a lot of talent on that football team.
They only have last season to go off
of.
And you know nobody's paying attention to them in the preseason.
Yeah, you know what? Well, people say the same thing about the Bengals, and look what happened. I'm not saying they're gonna be that extreme, but you know what I mean. Like, they said the same thing about the Bengals. They end up winning the division, winning the AFC and going to Super Bowl. Did they win the NFC, the AFC North? Did they win the division too?
Uh-huh.
The Bengals, yeah, they won the division too. Yeah. So yeah, they can say whatever. There was talent. There's talent there. So it is what it is. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. I'm chatting with founder of Double Take Sports and 3-Point Conversions Commanders reporter, Karita Parks. All right, so Saturday, you talked about, we just get right into it. Saturday, the Commanders travel to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. This should be the dress rehearsal game. I think Coach Rivera came out and said the starters will probably play a half. So is that a good move for this team to play for this team for the starters to play a half? Is that what you were thinking before you said it?
I think it's time. Mm-hmm. We can't do the sample size no more. We need to really see what we're working with, especially because you only have 3 preseason games now.
Yep.
It's not 4 that it used to be. Mm-hmm. So, no, we need to see what we're working with at this point. And my understanding is the Chiefs are playing their starters for a half, too. So I want to see our starters against some other starters. Especially the Chiefs. The Chiefs starters are going to be, because yes, they don't, you know, they don't have Tyreek Hill no more or whatnot, but they still have Patrick Mahomes and they still have enough gas. They got Travis Kelce. They still got enough weapons on that team. So I think that this will be a really good test, and we'll really be able to see what we're working with. And I want to see the defense too, because they were a little soft to me. I mean, I know it's preseason, so you ain't trying to like.
Oh no, you're right. No, you're right. No, you could tell. You could tell what defense. Like, this is what Karita. I'm gonna be real with you. You could tell what defense looks soft in the preseason. You could tell if they played the way Washington played against the Panthers. That defense looks soft.
So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I need to see them on the field longer because that's not going to work, especially when this is supposed to be this. We have touted this defense for so long. It's been the same story, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wish you believe me.
Except for that season, Rivera's first season, I think they showed. You know, they showed some.
They're like a top three defense that year.
Expected from them, but I didn't see that really last season. So yeah, I mean, I think it's important. And if you also fired your D line coach, I need to know why. I need to see it on the field.
we could take whatever you take out of it, like the D line coach being fired. I mean, I think that him and Jack Del Rio had issues in terms of like schematic issues. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying personal, but schematic issues. And
well, that's what I mean. Like, I do feel like it had to do with like play style of play and play touch. Yeah. I definitely think that.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I want to see if making that move is that going to make a difference. Are you trying to be more aggressive, or what are we trying to do
here? I think I'm sure I'm wrong, so I'm not going to act like I'm right. So anybody out there, like how do you know? I'm telling you, I'm sure I'm wrong. But my opinion is that, you know, Del Rio wants to play his style of football, which is probably, I mean, he's a coordinator. If I'm going off consistency, I don't think he likes to blitz or show any pressure or do anything, you know, crazy. And I think that, you know, Sam Mills III wanted to be more exotic in certain things in terms of how he wanted his guys to rush. So, and then that's how it kind of worked out. And I think that Jack Del Rio won. So, in my opinion, if we get the same old, then you know whose fault it is.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's 100% going to show on the field. We're going to find out one way or another.
That's the blessing about football sports, right? You're going to find out. You have to play. So, we're going to find out. That's the blessing of sports. What I love about it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think they should, you know, I'm glad that they're playing the whole half. I was surprised at how much they played in the first game. I was happy that Rivera coached that way, like the first team offense play until they did something positive, and then the defense played a little longer than I expected. So I'm happy. Like, I like that. I think you got to start making it.
I do agree with that. Yeah. Like, you're going to play until you
show me something. You're going to show me something. Like, this ain't Club Med. You're going to show me something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'm glad with that. So, Karita, so who for you, like from watching the first preseason game and hearing all the reports, you know, and whatnot, who to you needs a good showing Saturday?
That is a good question. You know, it's funny because it's like you don't really hear much about the guys who were on the bubble.
Uh-huh.
And I hate to say it, just from the storylines that came out of the first game, I definitely think Antonio Gibson needs a good showing. Uh-huh. I think we also saw a better, you know, Jamin Davis.
I heard he's a good guy, though.
I'm concerned about him.
They're gassing him up right now. I like Jamin. So, again, that's another guy I like. But I heard they, I mean.
But right. And he had a positive game.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see that again.
Yeah.
But
I'm with you. I want to see Jamin do special things. I don't want him just to be a guy, though. I'm with you. But I want him to do something special. That's a guy I want to see. I'm with you on that, though. I'm with you with Jamin.
There's also been a lot of talk about Armani Rogers. I think he's the guy on the bubble.
Okay. I didn't know that. This is good. This is good. It's good info. It's good intel. Go ahead. Continue.
So, you know, I think, you know, he probably needs to show a little something. I think they like him, but, you know, you have so many spots.
Yeah.
But that's what I would say because, yeah, just based on, like, what I saw Saturday and the stories that came out of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't a lot of talk about Jamin Davis, I'll say that, but that was just an observation of mine.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Jamin Jamin, I want to see Jamin do something special. I think he's okay. Yeah. I just want him to do something special.
Exactly.
I'm with you about Gibson. Obviously, he needs to ball out, and he's gonna be doing some kickoff returns and special and punt returns. So maybe he'll do something special there. and then you know, to me, I gotta feel confident as a fan, I gotta feel confident about the kicking situation. So I need to see Sly
true.
Like show me something. I need to see Joey Sly show me something. I need to know that he makes every extra point. Let's start there. I like to start small. Every extra point, make every extra point. Then, you know, I want to see you boom a 45-plus field goal. Then I know, all right, you know what? This is a guy that, you know, it could be it. Because he looked the part, you know, I think everybody gets fixated because he's like a tough dude. Like, he's like a tough dude for a kicker. And, like, everybody get fixated. He lift weights. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and whatnot. He fit the part. Like, you know
what?
Tough guy.
I need you to kick.
I don't care if you fat and flabby. I didn't even make a kick. I don't care what it is. Like, I don't care if you taking shots of 17, 38, and then getting ready to kick a field goal. Like, as long as you make it, I don't care. You can be my best friend. Like, just make the freaking kick. You know what I'm saying? So I want to see like him consistently step up there and make kicks. This is the most important thing for me. I just need the defense to show me that they got some aggression. Like, I want them to be ruthless. I want them to be cutthroat. They need that type of mentality. I need that mentality from this defense.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, not because he had a bad game, but Carson Wentz does need to have a good game.
Agreed.
Because there's still that slight skepticism that people have about, like, you know, what are we really getting? And I think this is an opportunity to at least show us more than he was able to on Saturday.
Well, it can definitely happen. It needs to happen ASAP for Carson. Carson needs to show out ASAP because, darn it, I need that from Carson.
Yes,
I need it for Carson. Hey, Karina, thanks for being on. Before we let you go, please let our listeners know how they can find you on social media and how they can catch, you know, your multiple podcasts because you're a star.
Right. So you can catch me on social media at Double Take Sports. That's at DBL Take Sports. Also at Karina C. Parks. That's my personal handle. You can find my Commander's work on thethreepointconversion.com and all of my other sports writing on dbltakesports.com. And when the Wizards season pops back off, which is coming around soon, you can catch the Triple Dub podcast.
I love it.
Yes. They released a schedule yesterday. I was like, oh gosh, we here again.
Yeah, you know when y'all here, you ready. It's about to go down.
Woo,
you know what I'm saying? Y'all may see here. You may be at the game with John Wall versus the Wizards. Wouldn't that be that's the game to be.
That'll be the first one with fans. So he gonna be lit. The fans gonna be lit.
They gonna cheer that man all the way.
Yeah,
all the way. Bradley Good better have a good game that game because he gonna get it. He gonna get dragged if he don't have a good game and John Wall fries in that game. He's gonna get dragged.
And I hope they give him like some sort of tribute. I can't remember if they did that last time, but they need to give him a tribute.
They gotta give him a real tribute, like a real tribute.
Yes,
like
he deserves a tribute in front of the fans. Definitely. He held y'all down for years.
Definitely. Hey, Karina, thanks for being on. Appreciate you. We're going to have you on again. We're going to chop it. You know, maybe we'll talk some Baltimore Ravens stuff. You never know.
Yes. I'm trying to take over.
I see you. All right, Karina, you stay blessed, all right?
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Again, you can catch Karina on Twitter, and that's at Karina C. Parks. That's at Karina C. Parks. All right, host of The Real Deal with Damian Adams and co-host of the third and three podcast, Damian Adams will join me to talk boxing after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports saying for Aegis. Yiddig, deuces.
And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. More so than one. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback.
Don't you
man. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wole, and we are part of Ampire Media at ampiremedia.com. You already know the homies, Will T and Ray Jeezy, are out. But right now, we have host of The Real Deal with Damian Adams and co-host of the 3rd and 3 podcast, Damian Adams. What's up, my man? And I'm glad to have you back to the Urban Sports Scene, dude.
Man, thank you for having me on, man. I really appreciate it. Being re-invited is always special, man. I did a decent job the first time around.
Oh, made a great job. You know, we were chopping it for so long on the last show. I think we did like a good 40-something minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was everywhere. So I had to get you back on, man. But this time we're going to talk directly with the topic. We got boxing. It was a big week of boxing, and, you know, upcoming week of boxing as well. So let's talk. Let's chop it. All right, so let's start with what's coming up. Alexander Usyk puts his WBA, WBO, and IBF heavyweight world titles on the line in a rematch against former champion Anthony Joshua on Saturday in Saudi Arabia. Who do you expect to win the match? I mean, win the fight, and why?
Oh, man, this is going to be a really good fight. The first time around, it was a very close fight and a very good boxing match. Uh-huh. I think this will be just as good. I do think that Alexander Usyk will win again. The reason I think he's going to win is that he's already felt the power of Anthony Joshua. Yeah. So now he knows that he can take that power, and he's the better boxer. What I saw in that first fight is that his boxing IQ is so high,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And he did a great job in that ring of making sure that Anthony Joshua didn't get to use his size to his advantage.
Uh-huh.
So for those who are listening who aren't big-time boxing fans, Anthony Joshua has always been heavyweight. He probably was over 200 pounds since he was a teenager,
yep,
right?
Uh-huh.
And Alexander Usyk moved up from cruiserweight. So he's kind of naturally heavyweight. And he used that being naturally smaller to his advantage by moving side to side, feigning in and out of the pocket. He did a lot more movement than you'd normally see from heavyweight.
Yeah.
And that really threw Joshua off with the movement and the boxing. And he was able to take advantage of that and land a lot. He hit Joshua the most Joshua's ever been hit in a boxing match in that first fight. And I think that we're going to see adjustments from Joshua. He's going to be more physical. He's going to try to impose his will a bit more in this fight. But I think Usyk is so smart in that ring that he'll be able to adjust to the adjustments that Joshua makes. So I think that'll be a very good fight, but I have Usyk winning by decision. I would say maybe like 116, 112, somewhere around that range. A good fight. But you'll see that Usyk gets the winner.
Because the boxer always wins, typically always wins. It's crazy because, you know, the first fight, because I'm an Anthony Joshua fan, right? So I'm honest, like I'm an Anthony Joshua fan. But I know the greatness of Usyk. Like I know it. Like I told folks this fight scares me because this dude he's more skilled. He's one of the best boxers in the world. You know what I mean? He's just a cruiserweight, right? But he's one of the best boxers in the world. And skill, sometimes if you can take the punch, skill beats out, you know, a power, you know, and when he can move and he has good footwork. So I wasn't surprised what happened in the first fight. Wasn't surprised at all. Like I even said, like if I told this was my prediction. If it went the distance, Usyk was going to win. Like he was going to win. It wouldn't be close. If it was early, if it was a stoppage, it was Joshua. Same thing. Thing's going to apply here too as well. If it goes the distance, it's Usyk. If it stopped early, it's Joshua. But I still think from what I saw in the first fight, I still think it's going to be, I think Usyk still has, you know, he has a nod. I think Usyk is one of the best boxers in the game, period. You know what I mean? I think because we're in the heavyweight division, we don't give people their flowers, but he's one of the best boxers in the game, period. The same way we talk about Lomachenko, we can talk about Usyk for heavyweights because his footwork is great. He gets you in angles. He gets your feet flustered because he's moving. And heavyweights aren't used to guys who move like that. I mean, everyone sees that, you know, Fury can move, but this is a different level of movement, right? This guy is fluent. He's more fluent than Fury. Now, the power, yeah, obviously the power is not going to be the same as an Anthony Joshua or a Tyson Fury or Deontay Wilder or King Kong Ortiz, you know, folks like that. But still, it's good enough where, you know, if he can catch you, you know, a surprising punch can knock you down just like a power punch can. So, to me, he's the type of dude that's a problem. I actually think he's the best heavyweight, period. And you can put you know, I don't even care for Tyson Fury. I think he's better than Tyson Fury. That's my opinion. We can go any which way with that. But I do think that I agree with you. I think it is, if I have it, you know, 116, 112, maybe 117, 111, something like that. Because if it goes the distance and Joshua can't knock him down or can't catch him and he fights the same fight, then I don't see anything different. But Joshua would have to really take a lot of risk and try to maul him to win this fight. He would really have to kind of – he has to show his power. He has to show his aggression and be the bully on the block. But I'm not sure that's his style, though. And plus, Joshua's chin, even as we talk about Usyk's lack of power compared to Joshua, Joshua's chin isn't strong. So I don't even know he's going to want to even go all in the deep waters with that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I definitely hear what you're saying. I think Joshua doesn't have a choice, though.
I know.
He has to go in and try to bully him. Like, yeah, he has to go in and try to bully Usyk around. Because the first time around when they first fought, I went back and rewatched the fight last week. Uh-huh. Usyk's back only touched the ropes one time during the fight.
Barely.
In the ninth round, his back finally touched the ropes. And immediately, Usyk clinched him. They spun out, got back to the middle of the ring. So he has to make sure that Usyk's back touch the ropes multiple times. He has to get close in. Because with Joshua, it's weird because usually a fighter of his size at 6'6", with an 82-inch reach, usually those guys are good at jabs and straights. That's usually what their go-to is.
Yeah.
But with Joshua, what makes him special is that he can throw hooks and uppercuts very fluid, unlike people of his size, mm-hmm. right? His most famous punch is the uppercut he landed on Vladimir Klitschko, right? So when you think about that, that's what he has to do. He has to get on the inside, throw hooks, throw uppercuts, and try to catch Usyk that way. If he catches Usyk with one of those mean hooks or mean uppercuts, he could knock him out because he does have special power like that. But the thing is, with Usyk can also catch him, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And Joshua does have a suspect chin, but he has to take those chances. He has to go in and have no fear. And one thing I did like about the pre-fight to this, Joshua hasn't been as friendly. In the first fight, he was very, very friendly.
Yeah, he was real friendly
Usyk.
The first fight. You're right.
Yeah, he was very friendly going in. And this fight has been very different. You know, he's been talking about how he grew up watching gangsters and all this different stuff. So so for me, I'm like, okay, I can see what your mindset is going into this one. So hopefully he follows through on that and tries to bully Usyk. But if he goes in trying to outbox Usyk again, he's going to lose for sure.
All right, so David on Twitter, that's at Bogon Dada, say Usyk by late stoppage. I don't think Usyk. Well, you know what? It goes. It's wild because
I could see it
because you know what you talked about the first fight, and there was a couple of times Usyk almost had Joshua, like he almost had him, like he stumbled a couple because
that
chin.
That's 12th round for sure.
Yeah, that chin is like that chin is terrible. And I'm Nigerian, and Joshua is like Nigerian too, so it's like but his chin is terrible. Like, you know, it's terrible. So yeah. I could see that. I could definitely see that happening. So this is my next question for you then. What would a loss do to Anthony Joshua's boxing career?
Honestly, a loss, it doesn't really damage him because we know Usyk's the better boxer.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it would just be like, okay, we know Usyk's better than him. He can move on and maybe fight the winner of Deontay Wilder and Robert Helenius, who are fighting in October.
Yeah.
Because people would still want to see Anthony Joshua Deontay Wilder fight.
Yeah, they still want to see
So maybe he could go in that direction. Maybe another Andy Ruiz fight. Andy Ruiz comes in shape. That could be a good fight to have a trilogy there. So there's still fights that he can go to and have. But then the Tyson Fury fight, I think, will be out of the question.
Yeah.
That's the one. That's where it will be mostly affected. Because if people forget, he was supposed to fight Tyson Fury. It got pushed back because of negotiations. And he ended up taking on Usyk because of that. And I remember when that fight got announced, I was like, he's not going to fight Fury now. He's going to lose to Usyk.
Me too. See, look, we're the same way, man. I was like, damn, this is the wrong fight. I remember saying that. I was like, damn, you going to take this fight? You better off. In my mind, I was like, you better off taking Fury, dude.
Yeah. I think, honestly, his style is better for Fury.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
man.
Earlier you said that you'd like Usyk over Fury. I think Usyk is more skilled than Fury, but Fury is just so big.
I know. That's the thing.
I don't know if Usyk could beat Fury just because of the size difference.
Yeah.
Because,
I think it'll beat him around.
Fury's going to come in 6'9". Yeah, he'll get some rounds for sure, but he'll come in at 6'9", 270. It's going to be crazy to even watch that fight.
But you know what? I don't like to me, I'm a firm believer in iron sharpens iron, right? So the individuals that Fury got to beat up on, like he got to beat, and no knock, I even told folks, like, I expected Wilder Fury in fight one, like one. Did I even expect the Wilder to win that fight? So what happened when it was a draw, but really Fury dominated that fight. Then the other fights, you could see like the skill is so much different. But then you're fighting dudes who are similar in terms of not as skilled in like their power. They got power, but they're not as skilled, right? And the heavyweight division isn't like the most talented division out there, right? It really isn't. Like, it's not the most talented division. So I'm like, it's hard for me to say how good I know Fury is one of the best boxers, you know, period. I'm not going to throw any shade at him. I think he's one of the best boxers, period. But we haven't seen him with a surgeon in the ring. Like, we haven't seen that. Like, he's a surgeon in his own way. We haven't seen him with a surgeon, and how is he going to respond to a surgeon? We've seen how he responds to punchers. Yeah, how he fights punchers, which is totally different. But how do you respond to a surgeon? It's like, for instance, if you told me initially, I remember like when Canelo fought Mayweather, and I was like, he's old Mayweather. He's fighting Canelo. Canelo was a savage. He's a Terminator. Like, I know he wasn't as skilled yet, but he's still a Terminator. With that strength, Floyd ain't had no chance. I said, Floyd don't got a chance. This is a young lion. Floyd was the surgeon. You know what I'm saying? So the surgeon took him apart. So I don't know. Like, I'm with you. The size does matter and the power. But I'm like, we haven't seen him with a surgeon, though. You know what I'm saying?
No, I definitely hear you. Like I said, I think you would have a good chance. Mm-hmm. But it's just the size difference in heavyweight is so crazy. I've been saying this for years. I think there should be a weight limit in heavyweight.
I agree.
Like, it's so nuts that Fury came in at 270 against Wilder, who Wilder at the biggest is 230.
Yep.
Like, it is so nuts. And don't get me wrong, Fury is better than Wilder. He's way more skilled. Wilder is a one trick pony.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that size difference matters. There's a reason why you don't have bantamweights fighting middleweights.
Facts.
Because the 40 pound difference matters.
Yep.
So I don't understand why we get the heavyweight, just act like weight doesn't matter at all. So there definitely should be a weight limit. And Fury, because of that size, it'll be very interesting, but I'll have to take Fury just because of the size difference, and he has skill.
Yeah.
So it's not like with other heavyweights that are bigger but don't have the skill.
He has skill.
So that's why I would take Fury.
Yeah, definitely. He does. Yeah. He definitely has skill. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Amppire Media at amppiremedia.com. Right now, I'm chatting with host of The Real Deal with Damian Adams and co-host of the Third and Three podcast, Mr. Damian Adams. All right, Damian. Now, Junior welterweight Teofimo Lopez rebounded from his first pro defeat with a seventh round TKO over Pedro Campa on Saturday in Vegas. What were your thoughts on Lopez's performance?
It was what he was supposed to do. You know, it's one of those moments where it's the Chris Rock joke, but you want a cookie? Like, this is what this is what he was supposed to do, right? Like, this was a comeback performance. It was his introduction to 140. And Pedro Campa is a tough guy, but nowhere near the skill level of Teofimo Lopez. So Lopez looked sharp. He looked like he was supposed to look in this fight. He looks like he's mentally there. I know that's one thing that he was going through, is mental issues, and he was going through personal issues with, you know, going through divorce with his wife and all those different things. And also he had health issues going into the George Kambosos fight. So he looked healthy. Look good to go, but it's something where you can't go too far with the, you know, the praise, because it was Pedro Campa, who a lot of us didn't hear of before this fight.
Yeah.
So for him, it's like, okay, you did what you're supposed to do. He did a little showboat, and he made it entertaining for what it was, but it was his showcase fight at 140, and now the next one should be somebody who should be a real test.
All right, then who should be his next dude? Like, who should he fight next?
So it depends on what he really wants to do. So if he wants to have a next fight where it could be maybe pay-per-view, it's Ryan Garcia.
Ooh.
Right? Ryan Garcia is now at 140. Oscar De La Hoya was at the fight. So maybe Oscar and Top Rank were doing some talks, and they were trying to set up something, because the rumors is that Ryan Garcia and Tank aren't happening, right? The talks aren't going well. So Ryan Garcia is going to look in a different direction. Maybe Teofimo Lopez is that different direction. Yeah. And that's a big money fight right there, right? Because Ryan Garcia is a huge social media star, becoming bigger and bigger as far as boxing. Teofimo Lopez already has a big name. I think that could be a pay-per-view fight for ESPN or DAZN, depending on where they want to put it. If you want to make the money, you go with Ryan Garcia. But that doesn't lead directly to a title belt. Now, he yelled out Josh Taylor after the fight. He's not going to get Josh Taylor right away. He's not going to skip the line like that. There's a lot of talent there at 140. So if he really wants a title shot, he just take on Regis Prograis. Regis Prograis, former champion at 140. His only loss is to Josh Taylor. He's somebody who, if you beat Regis Prograis, Josh Taylor or whoever the champion is next for you. Yeah. Because Reese Progre is the number one ranked contender for most sanctioning bodies at 140. So if he runs the title shot right away, you fight Regis Progre. If you want the money, you take on Ryan Garcia, and then you'll have maybe a Regis Progre or a Jose Ramirez next year before you get a title shot.
I think this person is joking, but in a Facebook group that we're in, it says knowledgeable boxing fan said Kambosa. I mean, Dane Gilbert said Kambosa. I don't want to see him fight because Kambosa. I don't need to see. I know he needs to get like a rematch and kind of revenge the loss, but I think we do think that, you know, if Teofimo has his head straight, he can get Kambosa out of there.
Yeah.
I'm like, his next fight, I think Ryan Garcia and Tank need to happen. I'm going to go back. It needs to happen. Like, to me, that's a – they need to work that out. Like, that needs to happen because it's the perfect fight. It's the perfect fight in terms of styles. Like, two knockout dudes going at it. Like, something about that – and they're young. Something about that works for me. Like, that fight is – and they're both – like, in terms of their own markets, they're big names. Like, one, like you talking about the social media usage that Ryan Garcia is, how he utilizes that and how it's making him a popular boxer, regardless of if you think he's super skilled or not. He has power. He has skill. Regardless of what you think the level of skill is, he has skill. And then you got Tank, his stardom is growing, right? You can put those two together. That's a special fight. I think sometimes people make things so complicated. That is a special fight that I think needs to happen. I wouldn't want – shoot, if I was Ryan Garcia, I wouldn't fight Teofimo Lopez. I don't think that's a good that can hinder his stardom. Depending on what Teofimo Lopez you get, right? If you get a motivated Teofimo – this is my thing. If you get a motivated Teofimo Lopez, none of them dudes can see him. I'm going to keep it a buck. Like, none of them dudes can see him. Like, if you get the Teofimo Lopez that was motivated against Lomachenko – even though I thought Lomachenko figured him out towards the end of the fight, but it was too late. If you get that Teofimo, them dudes ain't seeing him. Like, that's just my opinion. Them dudes ain't seeing Teofimo Lopez. So, if I'm Ryan Garcia, I would go for the mega fight, which style that works best for me in Tank, and then take my chances with that before I even test the waters with Teofimo Lopez. Because he's obviously hungry after the Kambosa's loss. Like, he's hungry. Like, that was a disappointing loss. So when you hit rock bottom, you know what I'm saying? You know, all right, you don't want to be here no more. So now you're extra motivated. I don't know if you want to see that, Teofimo.
No, I definitely hear what you're saying. Teofimo Lopez also has more size than Tank. And with Ryan Garcia, because Ryan Garcia is so much taller than Tank, he definitely would have an advantage and Tank would have to come in.
Yes.
And that's what Ryan Garcia does well, is when people have to come in and try to get through his punches is when he does well.
Yep.
So it'd be very interesting to see if Tank could get on the inside against Ryan Garcia. Because Ryan Garcia doesn't have – he probably could, yes. And Ryan Garcia doesn't have the best footwork or head movement, right?
Agreed.
So that's where he could find himself in trouble against a Tank or Teofimo because they can get on the inside. But against Tank, because he's so much longer than Tank, Tank would have to take some punishment to get on the inside. And maybe he knocks out Tank. Maybe he catches Tank with the right shot.
Yeah.
But against Teofimo being a naturally bigger fighter,
man,
he get on the inside, probably can take those punches and get to that body. So I agree with you. Tank's the better match for Ryan Garcia. But if Tank's not working out as far as negotiations.
Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
And that's the thing. You got to move on to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And with Tank, I get so annoyed with the whole thing because what's going on? Why are we not getting Tank in bigger fights?
I agree, man. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's my thing. I know a lot of people think I hate on Tank because I don't. I like Tank. I think Tank is super skilled. But this happens a lot with Tank. Like, seriously, like, it gets to a point where they're like, I want the fight. And I'm not saying Tank doesn't want the fight. I'm not saying it. I'm not putting it on Tank. I'm not doing that. But I'm your management team, bro. Like, Mayweather, whoever. Like, dude, like, it's time. Like, you've been here enough. Rolly wasn't worth it. Everybody knew Rolly wasn't. Rolly was a talker, but Rolly wasn't good. Like, I don't want to be mean to Rolly. Like, I don't want to. But Rolly was, in terms of prize fighters, Rolly wasn't the one. All right, Rolly wasn't the one.
No, there was no benefit. There was no benefit outside of the money he made for Tank to take that fight.
Yes,
none.
Seriously, so
like it was all risk, no reward for that fight for Tank.
So I just want to see. I want to see Tank fight just some, like, even when he fought. The dude that was ducking Gary Russell Jr.
Leo Santa Cruz.
Yeah, Leo Santa Cruz, right? All right, Leo. Like, even fighting Leo, like, that's a perfect fight for you. Like, Leo got no power. Like, it was a perfect fight for you. Like, I don't need that. Like, I need a fight where you know that you're going to be able, you're going to be in deep waters. Like, it's you're now at a point where that's where you're supposed to be at. Like, you're supposed to take fights that are in deep water. Like, once you hit that name, that, like, you're bringing folks to the, you're bringing folks to the arena, the stadium, whatever. You're bringing folks to that, to the venue. It's time to take in the names now. That's like Bud Crawford fighting whoever, or fighting, I'm trying to think of an individual prior, like not fighting the top dudes like a Porter or a Errol Spence. He's going left where there's obvious contenders that want to see you, and it can happen, right? Or like Errol, same thing. Like, Earl's been fighting all the dogs, right? Even though some of them are obviously in his state and PBC stable, but he's been fighting all the dogs. But I'm just saying, like, yo, this is the opportunity. You have him here. Fight him. In your division, there's a plethora of young, good boxers that are darn near top of the tier in the pound-for-pound rankings. Fight somebody.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely with you, man, because there's so many, like you said, so many fighters at 135 and 140.
Yes.
They're both stacked. So there's so many fighters he could have taken on. And I know that, you know, Mayweather doesn't really work with Top Rank. But something got to happen where you go either him there or the zone. Like, there has to be something where he goes outside of PBC to get these fights maybe. And the thing is, Tank has to be more vocal.
Yes. Right?
I know that he's on the promotion team, but he has to be more vocal and say, I want this. Like, we mentioned Wilder and Fury earlier.
Oh, my God. Look how they made that happen. Look how they made that happen.
Exactly. Like, they both wanted it. They both like, okay, we need a name to fight against. Let's make this happen. And they made it happen. Yeah. If there's enough money out there between a Garcia and Tank, you could split it down the middle. Yeah. Now, I know Tank is the bigger name. He's going to be the A side of the fight. He's going to want bigger splits. And that's fine. I get that. Mm-hmm. But you should still be able to make it work. Even if it's 60-40, you should be able to make it work to where they can split it, have ESPN and DAZN, share pay-per-views, whatever you want to do. But it should be makeable, because when there's enough money on the line, it shouldn't be this hard. Same thing with Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford. We keep saying it's damn near done.
Yeah.
Man, y'all get this deal done. Yeah. And go ahead and get the fight.
But at least like, you see effort. Like, I know there's like the negotiating stuff, but at least to me, you see more effort. I feel like you see more effort with those two, especially Bud. Like, I'm not signing with Top Rank. I'm going to do my own. Like, you could tell Bud wants to fight. Like, he wants the fight. Like, he wants it. Now, obviously, there's politics. You know what I mean? And I'm an Earl dude, so I'm saying this because I do see that Bud wants to fight. So I'm not going to act like Bud don't want the fight. But I do think that, like Earl and Bud, they got to get to a common ground. And I know ego plays a part, too. Like, you got to understand who sells out venues. Just so you talk about Tank, who sells out venues, who makes more money. It's got to come to the right percentage of, you know, whatever. I mean, you got to – to me, there's a simple deal to make it happen. Like, Mike Tyson fighting Vander Holyfield, like, you know – I think fight one was worth, obviously Mike got most of the gate because Mike, it was the draw. But, like, it got to, like, I think their other fight deal was, like, the winner takes the most of the purse. I have to go back and remember. But you could do a deal where the second fight, you know, after who, the depending on the winner of the first fight, the second fight, that winner is guaranteed a certain amount of the purse for the rematch if you do a two-fight deal. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's things you can do. If you're so confident that if you're Bud, and in this situation, if you're Tank or Ryan Garcia, if you're so confident you're going to beat the man, then make it a two-fight deal and say the first fight is a guarantee, like the winner of that fight, the next fight, they guarantee this amount of purse. All right, shoot. Then you good. Just, you know, just don't get like hosed in terms of the first fight of negotiation, like in terms of like not getting your, like get close to your worth. You know what I'm saying? Close to your worth. But the second fight, you can make some wild number or whatever and take that deal if you're confident in your ability.
No, for sure. Like with Devin Haney. Devin Haney took less money because he knew, I'm going to embarrass George Campbell.
Yes.
So I'm going to take less money now.
Yeah.
And in the rematch, I'm going to go ahead and make that money on the back end, which he's going to make in October when they fight each other again.
Exactly.
So if you're confident, take a little less money now. You'll make it up on the back end.
Totally agree.
And I understand it's dangerous to do that in boxing because anything can happen. But if you're that dude.
If you're that dude.
Take less money now.
Yeah.
And get that money on the back end.
You gonna look, man. Mayweather beating De La Hoya did what for his career?
Exactly. Like, he became Money Mayweather after that.
So I'm just saying, like, so if you beat that kind of, you beat a Cal, if Bud beats Earl or vice versa, if Bud beats Earl or vice versa, you're bigger. You're a bigger star. That alone to me should already be more of a reward for you. Like, oh, I can now get to, if I beat Bud, I can be in Mayweather level, like close to approaching that type of talk or that type of buzz. Not that you're going to be there, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm approaching pop culture. You know what I mean? Like, same for Bud, vice versa. Exactly. If I beat Earl, I'm approaching not just being a guy that everybody in boxing circles know. I can be a guy that everybody knows in pop culture. Same thing for
because the casual fans will definitely come out for sure for that fight and buy that fight and everything.
Yeah.
And also, if say Errol Spence or Bud Crawford, they dominate against the other one, right?
Yeah.
So they dominate. They become undisputed at 147.
Yeah.
And then they, from there, I think both of them probably looking to move up after that.
Yeah.
You move up to 154, maybe you take on Jermell Charlo. You have undisputed versus undisputed. Like, the possibilities of what you can do after that fight are endless.
Endless. So I'm just saying, like, there's no – you got to make the fight happen. Look at the long-term game. Instead of looking at the short-term game. A lot of these dudes are looking at the short-term game. Look at the long-term game.
Yeah.
Because if folks would go on this route, man, there would be no Money Mayweather, man. Oscar would have been like, man.
Yeah.
Like, you got to get your weight up in terms of, like, get your money up. Like, Oscar would have been like, I'm not taking this fight. I need more from you. Like, you know what I'm saying? To give him an opportunity.
And that's real. People don't give Oscar enough credit for taking that fight. He
didn't have to take that fight at all. Did not. And he made
way. He was the bigger star.
Bigger star at that time. He's a pop culture draw. Mm-hmm. Way bigger draw. And Mayweather did good for himself in promoting himself during that whole fight process. In 24, he was... he made it, he killed 24/7 he killed it on HBO. But I'm just saying, but like you said, Oscar didn't have to give him that fight. He helped make Mayweather. You know what I'm saying? So think about it like that. Like, if you take this fight and you have a classic or one of those fights that we'll be talking about for ages, man, look, that does crazy stuff to your whole resume and your whole aura. Your whole legacy, man.
Yeah.
So it's crazy, man. But hey, man.
Not for sure.
Thanks for being on. I appreciate you. Before I let you go, tell our listeners about the pod, like your multiple pods, because you know you got a couple of them, and you know how they can catch you on social media.
Oh man, thank you again for having me on. I definitely appreciate it. I definitely gotta get you on my podcast soon. We'll talk some boxing, talk some football for sure.
Anytime, man.
And so you can find me on social media at The Real Deal WDA. That's The Real Deal, W as in whiskey, D as in Delta, A as in Alpha. If you follow me on social media, man, you'll get constant videos, constant content. I'm either dropping something about football, basketball, boxing all the time. My podcast is called The Real Deal with Damian Adams. On that podcast, we talk about the NFL, NBA, and boxing. We have music breaks. It's a good time, man. Awesome. We'll touch on some serious topics when it needs to be, but it's always a good time on that show. The 33 podcast is a football-based podcast. It's all NFL, but me and my co-hosts will go each and everywhere. We have a good time. You're going to get some laughs. You're going to get some knowledge. So please check out both of those podcasts, The Real Deal with Damian Adams and the 33 podcast. I know it's a lot to remember, so if you can't remember, just follow me, and you'll get access at The Real Deal WDA on all social media platforms.
But you know what's a blessing about, podcast and on your phone? They can just rewind, go right back. They got to take their time. Some people get lazy. Just rewind. All right? Rewind. It's not hard. You know what I mean? But it also follow my man, Damian. You follow him, that's even easier, obviously. But, you can rewind, go back. Just saying. We don't want to be a lazy culture. We don't have to be lazy. Shoot. Hey, Damian, thanks for being on, man. I appreciate you, homie.
I appreciate you too, man.
Right.
Have a good one.
I have a good one. All right, man. Again, man, that's Damian. Make sure you follow Damian on Twitter. That's at The Real Deal WDA. Again, at The Real WDA. Let me say it again. At The Real Deal WDA. Hey, man, this has been a dope show. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Again, don't forget to subscribe to The Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Check out the home of the urban sports scene, Ampire Media at ampiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Ampire shows as well as other great content. Hey, this has been a dope show. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Hopefully we'll have the homies Ray, Jeezy, and Will T back next week. Then we, you know, but then the family's all back together. You know, we can do the darn thing. But for now, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. Ya dig? Deuces. A mega. Lead us out, big homie.